Welcome to BizRocket Radio with Stone Payton and John Baker. John Baker is a certified financial planner with a Master's of Science in Personal Financial Planning. Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, Inc. owns the certification mark CFP, Certified Financial Planner, TM and CFP, and in the U.S., which it awards to individuals who successfully complete the CFP Board's initial and ongoing certification requirements. John Baker offers financial planning and securities through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., a registered in investment advisor and broker-dealer, member FINRA/SIPC, located at 1050 Crown Point Parkway, Suite 1675, Atlanta, Georgia, 30338. This program is for information purposes only and should not be considered a solicitation of or offer to buy or offer to sell securities or investment advisory services. Information in this program regarding market or other financial information is obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable. We do not warrant or guarantee the timeliness or accuracy of this information. When considering any registered security products, seek a prospectus carefully before you invest. Make sure you consult your financial professional regarding any specific situation. And now, get ready for BizRocket Radio. Here's Stone Payton and John Baker.
Good morning and welcome to BizRocket Radio. This is John Baker, and we are here in the middle of July, sweating it out in hot Atlanta and enjoying every minute of it. We've got a great show for you today on BizRocket Radio. This is a show that we get a chance to interview and talk to some of Atlanta's executives and business owners and learn a little bit from their experiences. Some of the challenges that they've had in their career, and also a lot of their successes. So we look forward to a great show this morning. We've got two individuals that one of which I've known for quite some time, and the other I'm getting to know more every day here with some of the groups that we're involved in. So the first discussion we're going to have is with Hal Parkerson, and Hal is an attorney and also a CFP. Works in estate planning and business financial matters. So, Hal, welcome aboard.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here and on this wonderful hot Atlanta morning. I notice the temperature is up 4 or 5 degrees each morning for the last 3 mornings, so it's getting hotter.
It is. It is. And I don't know when it goes down, but at least, you know, people do complain a little bit about the heat around here, you know. But you forget February and January, you know, and you're sitting there in January and the ice is going on. Remember the ice storm we had and all that craziness? You were begging for the 90s back then.
I spent most of my adult career in Long Island and Manhattan and Northeast, and I understand exactly what you're saying.
So you appreciate this stuff,
that's right?
That's
yeah.
Good.
And as well from Buffalo, New York. So,
Buffalo, that's even worse.
I can totally
that's right.
Understand that.
God. Well, so Hal, maybe you could tell us a little bit about your background and kind of how you came to be here.
Okay. I was an Eastern person. I was born in Eastern North Carolina, grew up in Central Florida, came to Atlanta at Emory undergraduate, then went to Columbia Law School in New York and worked there for many years, first with a large Wall Street law firm and then in corporations, doing a lot of financial work, working with banks, working with insurance companies, doing the financial side of transactions, raising money for the companies. And we also, as I got over the years, worked in the lending side, a lot of asset-based lending and things like that. Came here to Atlanta in 2001 with a company I was chief counsel of at that point. And we were a company that had $3.5-4 billion worth of assets with 19 offices around the country doing deals throughout the United States.
And you've now you're kind of working in your own realm.
That's right.
Tell us about your practice.
Yeah, my practice is oriented towards medium and small businesses mostly. Okay, my practice has really been up and running for about 3 years now. Still ramping up on the client curve, but doing nicely. A whole variety of different things. I like working particularly with family-owned businesses. I find that the planning opportunities there that mesh both the my business background and interest as well as estate planning, so I can kind of get an integrated approach to family-owned businesses particularly. But work also with asset-based lenders, doing some work on their troubled receivables. Work with companies who are themselves trying to collect from other people. So kind of an all-purpose business-type practice.
And when working with the families, family businesses, mm-hmm. I would imagine business continuation has got to be a big topic that you work with.
Well, certainly. I mean, the ambit of businesses these days are from the ones who are under stress to, fortunately, the ones who are doing quite well. I happen to have clients of both spectrums, so ones who are having their best couple of years ever, surprisingly enough, and the ones that need all the help they can get to figure out how to make sure that they stay alive and prosper when the economy begins to turn a little bit more.
So tell me, if I was a business owner, how would I know that I might need your kinds of services? What types of things might I be looking for?
Well, any time you're trying to do something that involves some commitment to another person, you should be using a lawyer, or at least I think me, to a certain extent, even if it's very casual. A lot of people think I have to get into a serious relationship and do only serious work, whereas sometimes it's important just to run what they're going to email to somebody if they're hiring someone, if they're trying to contract to be supply goods to someone, if they are being contracting with somebody else to get goods. You know, first of all, and it frequently doesn't happen, it should be in writing. There are lots of people who still, you know, particularly in smaller businesses, obviously don't commit things to writing. And but the recollection they need to have is anytime you put anything in writing, that being an email that relates to something that might be a commitment, it can be a contract. Yes, an email can be a contract too. So frequently my clients would just shove something that they want to send out to me on the email, ask me to look at it for a few minutes, and I make some useful suggestions. Amazing. Of course, being a drafts person myself that drafts a lot of things, it's surprising when I look back at things that I, you know, didn't think of this, didn't think of that. That's why looking at it and thinking about it and having the benefit of somebody else's eyes is important.
You know, that brings up a particular topic that is something that's coming up, and I'm not sure if it's resolved, but you might know better, is the whole non-compete area of business here in Georgia. I know there's been a lot of changes going on there. Are you seeing a lot of adjustments or changes to non-compete agreements for existing clients or new clients?
The thrust of the changes in that area really relate to whether a non-compete clause or provisions might fall as a whole if one of them is defective. I think the severability, what with lawyers we call severability of the provision, so that if somehow the limitations in one area of non-compete are beyond the limits, it doesn't make the entire agreement fall.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the major thrust of the recent changes.
Mm-hmm. Any updates on that in terms of legislation that you've heard of?
Well, the update is a constitutional amendment that was passed last fall. So that is a thing which more or less makes more of these agreements enforceable.
Mm-hmm. So going back to the business owners and the, mm-hmm. and the types of services that you provide, obviously there's lots of attorneys out there and it's all sorts of competition. When you've seen, because you've been in business for a while and you've done these kinds of things before, what sets you apart from some of the other people that are doing these kinds of things?
Well, I think what sets me apart, number one, is I'm very interested in business. Okay, I've spent time in my career both on the business side of transactions and companies, as well as the legal side. So I'm inherently interested in business. The second thing is it's my goal to get to know the business as close to as well as the owner does as possible, so I can kind of help the owner think about things that they are not necessarily thinking of or haven't had the experience to know is even there. I mean, fellow who used to work in my department used to say, you don't know what you don't know. And a smart person realizes that and understands that somebody like me can compliment them and help point out things that in the context of their particular problem that may not have occurred to them, the possibilities that may not occur to them. I'm not only trying to get their legal mission accomplished, but I'm making sure that they've got the right legal mission.
And so you're almost like a partner for hire. It's kind of like you're a partner with that. It's almost like you get to date you, and they don't have to marry you.
Absolutely.
It's kind of nice.
Well, that's right. I think that's why lawyers have a certain similarity to consultants. And if you don't like them, you don't have to use them again, and you don't have to worry about firing them.
Yeah, and you can get into the whole concept of if you're focusing on what their business really is all about, instead of just simply saying, well, here's my square peg, and if you're a square peg, then I know that deal. But if you're a round peg, I don't know your business and how that really adjusts. You're going in and really learning their business, understanding the issues that they've got, maybe even better than they do, because you're applying all your business experience to their model.
Right. I've been both an owner of a number of different businesses, small, medium size, as well as a lawyer, and worked in large companies, large corporations with large deals. And even in those situations, I was not just a large deal guy. I was also the guy who would do the small things and make sure the small things got done through other people who were at that point working for me.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things that you had mentioned is the experience that you've had in finding funding or being involved in the funding side of businesses. Are you still involved in that now in your practice?
Well, I am, because I make it a point in what I do to circulate in the financial community here. I've been active in something called the National Funding Association. That's the group that has many people who are doing receivables and inventory finance, which I've done a lot of in my career, people who are doing factoring, people doing equipment finance. There's a whole plethora of people that are constellation, that group around that group, as well as I've done in my practice private placement memoranda for companies who are trying to raise capital. And of course, I spend a lot of time in the banking community. I have a certain number of banking clients that I try to spend time with.
I've worked with a lot of clients of my own that own businesses, and one of the things that they, especially when they're first starting out, mm-hmm. transitioning from an executive role, and maybe they're getting into their own business and trying to do something on their own. The whole concept of partners comes up all the time. You know, should I have a partner? Should I look for a partner? Should I try to do this on my own? You know, what's your experience been in working with these guys as successful business owners, both in partnerships and individuals? What are the pros and cons that you see?
As a lawyer, I don't necessarily bring a lot of expertise into this area, because it's basically facilitating and getting to know how to most effectively put your organization together.
Right.
But my observation after a lot of years is that having a partner is a very valuable thing. Starting and running a business is a very full-time, more than full-time operation. And if you've got a good, dependable partner, I think that that's an important step to help you extend yourself to make your goals more accomplishable. But the next thing I would say is you got to know the deal that you've got with the partner. And you've got to be very specific about how decisions are made. Who's going to break ties? Are you going to be allowed yourself to stalemate a decision and then end up being unhappy? What the limitations are. Now, it's a whole, you know, when you get more than one person owning a business, you've automatically ratcheted up the complexity a good deal. And whether you like it or not, you should be, as I said earlier, putting it in writing. I try to put together a term sheet, an outline of the points that the people need to look at, make a decision about in a one-page outline, so that they're digesting the important points, making decisions about them, agreeing on them, and then once they've got the outline agreed to, then the 30 and 40-page document comes there, because for most people, understanding what's in a 30 or 40 page document that's got a lot of complexity, a lot of tax language frequently in it, is a very daunting task.
Yeah. What if you had a short list of documents that somebody really needs to have as they're going into business ownership, and let's just say as a partnership or a, a, maybe a corporation, a C corp. What are some of the main documents that they need to make sure they've got?
Yeah, again, it depends on how complex the ownership and
decision structure. See, I love this. Structure. You see the legal talk here?
That's right.
He's defraying. He's like, I will not be recorded saying that these are exact right.
that's right. But if you're a solo owner, things get to be considerably simpler.
Yeah.
Okay. You can, in the minimum kind of situation, you're obviously going to have to be incorporated or have your articles of organization filed with the Secretary of State, and you're going to need a relatively simple set of operating agreements. Beyond that, you've got to have a tax ID number, which is relatively simple to get. Many people work with their accountants to do that rather than their lawyers. Lawyers can do that. They can do themselves if they have the time.
Mm-hmm.
But you can get off the ground. You need also a business license from the county in which your office is located.
Right.
It's a relatively simple set. Now, after that, the articles of organization, when you've got more than one person, it increases in terms of the complexity, the decision-making rules, and things like that. And then you need to have a more complex set, let's say, of articles of organization if you're an LLC, or bylaws and shareholder agreements if you're a corporation. Our articles of organization tend to, in the LLC area, combine the elements of what we think of as the bylaws and the shareholders agreements.
Okay. Great. So if I'm a business owner and I decide, you know, I need to get an attorney involved and Hal's going to be my guy, what would be the process that I would go through with you? What would it look like?
Relatively simple. I call me, tell me what your who you are, what your organization is, what you're trying to accomplish, what help you've got in other areas. Frequently, there's an accountant already involved in that particular position. Some of the tax decisions may have been made already. There are, at this point, relatively standard ways in which an LLC, for example, is set up. Popular right now is to elect corporate taxation. And once you've elected corporate taxation, to elect sub-S standing. That's the structure of choice right now for most small businesses. I would say that's not the case if you're real estate oriented. That tends to have a straight LLC, not electing corporations.
There you go. Okay. Alan, to our right over here, is our director. Is
single member LLC.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. All right. So you get your incorporation squared away, and what's next? Do I come in? Am I seeing you? Am I doing this all on the phone?
Well, I have people who come in to see me. I go and see people. I tend to be very mobile. Okay. I think this day and age, mobility is important. So. Like a lot of other people, I'm out meeting and greeting and doing this and part of this organization, that organization. So as frequently we'll meet either at the client's office or nearby convenient location or at my office, which is at Abernathy and 400 at 1 Glen Lake Parkway.
A very convenient location.
I think it's a great location.
Yeah.
I live in East Cobb.
Yeah.
It's not too far away from where I live. I'm down in Buckhead.
Far enough, but not too far.
That's right. Right. I'm down in Buckhead a whole lot, so it's a great stepping off point for me.
Well, as you know, as an aside, I've known Hal for several years, and he's done a lot of great work with the Kettering organization and volunteered a lot of time there, so we certainly appreciate the work that you've done in the community.
Yeah, John's been very generous in terms of allowing us to be able to meet at his office. We've got a good group that is called the Finance, Banking, and Investments subgroup of Kettering. Has a lot of CFOs, CPAs, people in the investment advisory area, other people who are interested like I am in the financial parts and how money works.
Yeah, it's neat how the ideas just kind of flow in those meetings.
Yeah, we've tacked on something in that group with we have meetings which qualify for CPE credit for CPAs. So.
Yep. So if you're a CPA and you're a Ken member, then have at it, right?
That's right.
All right. So let me wrap up, Hal, with the last question, which is your pearl of wisdom. So in the years that you've been in business and the successful things that you've seen and things that have not been such great ideas, what would you say is a pearl of wisdom you'd like to share with our listeners?
Well, I think the pearl of wisdom I thought was the right way to say is I've touched on somewhat already, which is get it in writing. It doesn't happen if it's not in writing. I'm handling a matter for a guy who's now a former partner executive with an international group that's quite large. Neither he nor they bothered to get anything in writing, including anything relating to his partnership share, how you compute it, how you withdraw. There's a whole lot of things like that that just are mysteries and allow the opposition to say to a jury, let's say in a worst case, this is the way it is. Also, it allows my client to say, this is not the way it is. It's this way. And you've got, as they say, a jury there trying to figure out what your deal was.
Yeah.
Not the way to do it.
All right. So get it in writing.
Get it in writing.
All right. Well, thank you, Hal. Appreciate you coming on. And hopefully you can hang out and listen with Joan.
Be happy to.
All right. So our next guest is Joan Boneberg. And Joan is the president of Speech Improvement Resources. And Joan is a board-certified speech pathologist. So I have to enunciate appropriately in today's show.
I will be listening.
I am on the hot seat. So Joan, tell us a little. Welcome in, first of all.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it. Thanks for the visit.
My pleasure. And maybe you could tell us a little bit about your background.
Sure. I have been a speech pathologist for 27 years, and I have had most of those years in clinical practice regarding pre and post surgical voice disorders, stuttering, anything that regards the speech production of communication. And what I've done is I've melded those clinical skills with business communication skills. And it's been a great focus for this area in Atlanta. Always loved what I've done, and I just wanted to take that to another group to service with my skill set.
So tell us a little bit more about Speech Improvement Resources. What do you do? Who do you work with? Mm-hmm. What kind of business is it?
Well, I serve business professionals from young folks that are coming out of school trying to get their traction in their career all the way up to top levels of the executive area. My focus is to help them become much more effective and skillful in their own communications. I always tell folks, obviously, we are very adequate being communicators, or else we wouldn't be here.
Right, but right. We can all talk.
There
right?
you go. But, in, of course, with today's stresses and strains on work economy, you really do, as you mentioned with Hal earlier, you really do have to set yourself apart. So my mission is to help those business professionals set themselves apart in terms of their communication.
And how did you make that transition? That seems like not a straight line, right, from working with people that had either voice damage mm-hmm. or maybe issues just from getting that speech, basic speech, across sure. to working with people that are eloquent as it is and making them even better than they are.
That's a great question. Actually, you're the first person who has asked me that about that transition.
Well, that's why I'm on the show.
There you go.
Right?
See,
it's that's what
why,
I do.
That's what you
what
do.
What I do.
Actually, for me, it was extremely easy because my training, both in undergrad and graduate school, had to do with, of course, foundations of communication, whether that be content, nonverbal, speech production. So the speech area and what you were mentioning, voice and articulation and being polished, yep. if you will, is just one slice of the communication puzzle or pizza, if you will.
Yeah.
So I've had all the foundational training and education regarding other areas of communication because they all blend. You cannot have one piece and not have another,
mm-hmm.
if you will. So yeah. it was very easy for me professionally, and it also made very good sense. I've really set myself apart because, frankly, there's not a lot of me out there. There are not many speech pathologists in the States anyway, and those that are in practice typically are in the pediatric world or
yes,
in the
that's exactly right,
right yeah. or in the healthcare world for helping stroke victims yep. or head injuries.
Yep.
But for a person, a speech pathologist, to be in a private practice focusing just on the success for business professionals is very slim.
Certainly unique.
Mm-hmm,
I don't know that I've run it across. Mm-hmm. So communication, and I've heard studies, and I can't quote exactly what it is, but speech is like a small amount. Verbal is a small amount of what actually gets across from a communication standpoint, body language and gestures and tone and pitch and volume and the whole nine yards, right? Do you get into a lot of that?
Absolutely. There was a very, very small study out in, I believe it was UCLA several years ago. It was a small study of only, I believe it was 12 to 20 participants. And the result of that study was that the great majority of our communication, perception and understanding is through nonverbal means.
That's right, yeah.
But people from that study get very, if you will, hung up on the percentages.
Yeah.
And I don't look at necessarily the percentage-based, but it is nonverbal communication, whether it be body language or vocal considerations, eye contact, whatever you consider as a nonverbal way to communicate, far outweighs the verbal area, what vocabulary you select. Actually how your sentence structure is, how you're putting those thoughts together. Of course, that's all very important. But right. in the big picture, the nonverbal stands out so much more. But the problem is we as communicators don't necessarily consider that.
Yeah, we don't even think about it. It's
exactly.
like you're on automatic pilot.
That's exactly.
And you don't realize that what you're doing might be either offending or attracting, or you know, whatever, it has an impact on what you're doing. So, tell me how much of your work goes into that kind of stuff with executives and business owners, or even people who are just getting started.
Sure, people will contact me and will say, actually, I had a client who is a financial trainer actually down in Buckhead, and he called me and he said, you know, frankly, Joe, I'm a good communicator, but I don't want to be good. I want to excel.
Right.
So that is the type of client that I see. So they call. I do a lot of front-end work regarding discussions, concerns, areas that they believe that they need to improve upon and why, and the commitment that would be there to make those changes. And then I sit down and invite them either to my office or I go to their site and have an initial assessment. What is your history as far as career? What are your goals? What are you looking to accomplish through communication coaching services?
Right.
And once that has been discussed, we set upon with each other generating an action plan. What is the focus of this service for you? Someone may just want to improve their speech articulation. You know, I don't sound crisp. I really want to have that polished edge, particularly when I go in network.
Right.
It might be more than that. Sometimes I need to start with just immersive listening skills for someone that's a challenge for.
Right.
Because, of course, as you know, listening is the core to communication.
Yeah.
So it may be just very goal-specific, or it may be more of a full picture with an actual communication coaching program.
How much observation do you do with your clients? I mean, going to see them mm-hmm. in a public speaking environment, mm-hmm. maybe going to a networking function and just sitting back and watching what they do.
That's exactly what I do. A lot of times, which is so beneficial because I can do that prior or during or post coaching sessions.
Right.
I had a gentleman that he was a presenter. And I worked with him on a one-on-one basis, and I also saw him on site. He was speaking at a couple of the hotels downtown, and I sat in the back of the room, and I observed and watched and took my notes. And when there was a 5 or 6 minute break, he would come back, and we would chat about what I observed and what he thought he needed to, that he did well with or he needed to change. So it was everything from, you know, make sure that you are stepping in to greet your audience and be engaging. You had great volume there, but you need to uplift your vocal tone a bit. You know, those little details. And I always tell people the difference between being an adequate communicator and a skillful one is just detail.
Right.
That's all it is. But it's easy to say, but you said earlier, we look at our communication like breathing. We don't think about it. We just do it.
Yeah, you've been doing it since you were two,
That's
right.
Yeah. It's an automatic process for us. But the obvious downside to that when one is trying to carve out a successful career, that is, if it's not first, it's second top priority of what you should be focusing on.
Yeah.
How are you going to communicate your message and receive others' messages? Actually, that, the second one, receiving, is just as important as the first.
Oh, well, tell me more about that.
Sure. A lot of people will come to me and say, I know I need to network. I know that this is something that is going to be so beneficial for me over time, but I don't like it at all. Help me.
Right. Yeah. Never heard that before.
No, never heard that. And so that's a common challenge for people. The focus of that whole networking piece is to have the awareness, first of all, but the willingness to just receive others' messages. I know that sounds a bit strange, but the process is, even if you are just meeting someone for the first time, that first impression of all of 10 seconds is vital. They need to know at a nonverbal level that you have an interest in not only their message, but them personally.
Right.
And it's not something that that needs to be feigned or the idea of, well, you know, I'm not really connecting with that person. That's fine. That's life. You know, we don't always connect with everyone that we meet.
Right.
However, in a business networking situation, that needs to be forefront in your mind. You have to be willing just to be a baseball catcher. Let them throw the pitch, catch the ball, and just let them tell their story.
Right.
And the beauty of that is, John, when you see that working naturally, it automatically comes back to you in a natural, oh, tell me a little bit about yourself personally or your business or your story. And it's a beautiful thing when that natural volley begins. And that's really the key to starting to create interest, first of all, with others. And then having that interest jump up to a relationship. And then having that relationship jump up to a trusted relationship.
Right.
So it's a process. You know, of course, business is all based on trusted relationships.
So,
well, where does that start?
And that's more of the one-on-one kind of work, mm-hmm. obviously. Mm-hmm. You know, you're working on you talk about the networking and the building rapport and doing all that good stuff. What about when, how much of the work that you're doing with your current clients gets into public speaking, doing workshops or seminars or keynote speaking? How much of it is that versus the one-on-one development?
50-50.
Really?
Yep, 50-50. It is, as you can imagine, now that people, companies have really scaled back with their talents, they are needing people to take over some other roles that they have not taken over before. And one of those is being more of a face of their company. And with that comes getting out, presenting, doing more networking. And folks who have not had to do that or have not had to, take that under their wing, now have to and say, I need to do this. I'm not real good at it. And because I'm not real good at it, I'm not comfortable. I need some guidance here. So it's about 50-50. It's interesting to see.
So tell me a little bit, and our listeners, about the kinds of things that you see that people tend to mm-hmm. need work on in the public speaking mm-hmm. arena.
For public speaking, it is a mindset is, I get nervous. I don't want to do this. I don't think I'm going to be received well. Well, I hear that so often.
Yeah.
And to really change that, it is a change of mindset. I tell my clients that you're a very educated person. You have a lot of knowledge and experience. And you're willing to share that to give value to those people that are sitting and listening to you. Frankly, they should be thanking you. You shouldn't be nervous about sharing your expertise and giving them something. And many people will stop and say, you know, I never thought about that before. But it's very true. Once you understand that you are being generous to give this information and have a discussion, because a presentation it's just a big conversation. It's really what it is.
Yeah, with a bunch of people.
With a bunch of people. Yeah. So that also, when people really consider that, that takes some of that edge off of, you know, I don't feel comfortable doing this. The other part is when we are uncomfortable doing something, particularly with our communication, we tend to want to speed up. We want to get it all out. We want to make sure we don't forget anything. And then, okay, we're done. I can take a sigh. You know, oh, I'm done. But it really should just be the approach of the opposite of really being thoughtful before. And it's all in preparation, frankly.
Yeah, right.
Preparation is the key. I always say to people, if you are going to take away any minutes away from any part of your presentation, don't take it away from the preparation part, because that will of course get you to that successful conclusion.
Yeah.
So it is pacing, it is being thoughtful, and just remembering that even though you may be speaking to 200 people or 1,000 people, there's still individuals that want to hear what you have to say.
Right.
But it takes some practice. It really does. And I think the more people hear this a lot, but it's so true, the more you offer to present, you have this groove that begins. And after, you know, experiencing that a few times, it actually becomes fun.
Yeah.
It becomes fun. It's like, wow. And people engage with you more.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's like you're forced into it, and it becomes part of that kind of comfort zone that you live in, and then you can do it at any time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think the key is, though, as you said, you mentioned, it is a big conversation. People will say to me, well, I'm great one-on-one or one-on-two or three in a networking, but get me in front of 50 or 60 people? No, not so good.
Right.
Just remember, you're just having a conversation with a few more people.
Right, right. Well, and it's interesting because now you're starting to get people transitioning from not just the public speaking thing, but now you get these webinars and these, you know, these teleconferences and these video conferences and the video conferences, personally, I have found much harder than the public speaking. Because you don't have any feedback. You get zero feedback except for maybe a text or an email that might come through that asks you a question.
Right.
But you are kind of filling with the message and the message and the message. You don't get any kind of interaction this is an area we should go into and kind of touch on a little bit more in terms of being important.
That's a great observation. And I hear that comment too when people that are in transition are receiving telephone, basically initial telephone shortlist interviews. And they'll say, it is one of the toughest things. I said, yes, it is. Because when we're on the phone, we are all behind the eight ball.
Right.
We only have our vocal tone,
yep,
volume, and pacing.
Right.
And vocabulary selection.
Right.
To rely on. And so you can see versus when we're face-to-face, look at all of the rich communication that we use on the nonverbal basis that we can't have when we're on the phone.
That's a tough one. And it's very efficient because you've got, you can have 200 people on a call like that. And there's no traveling.
Exactly.
You're here in Atlanta, and traveling is like the bane of everybody's existence.
Sure.
And if you can do it where they're someplace else and you're someplace else, it works great.
Perfect.
If you can get it across, right?
That's the point. Right. And you mentioned if you can get it across. And the point of being an effective and really skillful communicator is not about being perfect. it's about being engaging and being able with your style and your knowledge and your willingness to share that information to have people say, you know, I've learned something from that person and I enjoyed listening to that person.
Yeah.
It wasn't effortful.
Right.
It didn't take a lot of energy.
Right. You keep looking at your watch every, you know,
exactly.
3 minutes, right?
So my bottom line when folks say to me, I need to improve my presentation skills, I said, well, we need to look at your natural style first. That's where it's happening. And if you base your communication on your natural style, and if you will tweak and improve and change and modify from that foundation, then you have it.
Yeah, that's sage advice. I think I've seen even at you know, meetings we go to every week. All of us go to these kinds of meetings on a weekly basis, and you see speakers, and there are great speakers that you see, and they're not the same. You know, they have their own style, and they've taken that style. There's someone who'll come in jeans and a surfer shirt. And you look at them, you're like, are you really here in this meeting looking like that? And then they just blow you away. You're like, whoa, that was, I got it. Yeah, it was really good. And then somebody else will come in, you know, buttoned up, looking perfect, all that good stuff. And, you know, they nail it home also. It's just a matter of taking that style that you have. That's good.
It is.
So what have you found to be the easiest adjustment that people have been able to make in your coaching? Like, you've gone in and you said, you know what? These are a couple things for you to work on that they just go, oh, yeah, you know, for the most part, they can do that really easily. And on the other side of that, the hardest thing that they've had a problem adjusting to.
Yeah, that's a difficult question because for this reason, when someone comes to see me, they may have an extreme challenge with what we call the core of communication is the listening piece. And listening may appear very a passive behavior to a lot of people, but done right, it takes a lot of energy, effort, and focus. So when someone comes to me and say, well, you know, I just need to learn how to remember someone's names, or I'm really bad at remembering information that they've given me when I've just met them, you know, that can be just as much of a challenge as someone coming to say, I'm doing a lot of these radio spots now, or I'm doing a lot of presentations with technology these days. I really need to have my speech sound very polished and crisp.
Right.
That's just as difficult
as
what some might think as, oh, that's easy. Listening? Are you kidding?
Right.
I can do that.
So it's their own.
It's their own set. It really is. It becomes a scale compared to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something that you may have an extreme strength for, you know, it might be more of a challenge for someone else.
Right.
It's just, and it all, of course, boils down to that individual experience and willingness to say, you know, I need to work on that.
And on the easy side, is it the same way? Can things come easier to certain people than others, or are there?
That is true. You know, some people that are naturally people that just enjoy hanging around with people and interacting, of course, they will be naturally more comfortable in a networking situation, or, you know, I don't know anyone at this event, but I want to go. I'm going to go myself. That is an easier idea for them to handle versus someone that says, you know, I really should do this. I really need to do this, but I'm going to push myself. So every aspect of communication has its own challenges within somebody's scope of strength or weakness.
Do you have an example of a situation with a client, somebody, and you don't have to name names or anything, just that you, somebody came into you with a specific area that they were really trying to work on, that you saw just vast improvements, just to give our listeners maybe an idea of maybe how you take somebody through that process and how it works out.
Sure. Well, this area I've not talked about, but it fits the question nicely. I work with speakers of English as a second language, executives who are from other countries that obviously are extremely talented, come over to the States. that you know, want to be successful here. I work with people from all over the globe, Eastern European, Russian, Lithuanian, Asian, Peru, I mean, a lot of different people. It is amazing to see the dedication and the understanding that with energy, some focus and consistency, that their accented English can become clearer. And that is, when you stop and think about that, that's an amazing thing. Yeah. People will call me and say, I want to get rid of my accent. And I say, oh, stop right there. Now, I don't do that. Yeah. In fact, I love accents.
Right.
I will raise both hands and say, accents make our English so much richer.
Right.
My mission is to help business professionals have more clarity.
Right.
It's not necessarily about the accent. It's about clarity.
Right.
So, but I've seen that happen. When people come to me, there will be clients that come to me that have been in the States 10, 15, 20 years and say, you know, I've always needed to do this. I've always let it go. I need to do this now. So that concentration, that effort, and the understanding of how that can improve their business relationships, it's amazing. So I have seen tremendous changes with folks that need to improve their accent,
right,
to improve their clarity in their business,
but not lose that uniqueness.
Absolutely,
that they
have to, and that's the beauty of it.
Yeah, it really
they
is.
They keep that cultural unique aspect, and yet you can just see them. Their shoulders go down. They're much more relaxed.
Yeah.
And also with that, I also work with those clients that have difficulties understanding American expressions.
Oh, yeah.
Because we have...
Or using them
or
properly.
Or using them, right. And actually, the understanding, of course, comes, yeah, comes
helps
before...
the using, right?
Oh, but it's amazing. The pressure that can be placed on,
yeah,
executives in meetings, that they will come to me at the end of the day and say, I was lost.
Right.
Can you tell me what this means or that means? Someone said, yeah, not too long ago, what does out in left field mean? and I said, well, here's the historical reference of
right,
it,
right,
and why it's used or why that was used in a brainstorming situation. You know, the discussion at the table was, yeah, what are some solutions that we could throw at this problem? And my client said, somebody at the end of the table said, what are you, nuts? That's out in left field.
Right.
And he didn't get that.
It's like,
and he said everyone else was chuckling, but he didn't, because he didn't understand.
Right.
So that's
right.
Another huge part,
yeah,
of the cross-cultural communication areas that I work with.
Great. We are kind of coming up on time, but I did want to talk about your book, because mm-hmm, I know that you're an author, and... Mm-hmm. I think the last book that you wrote was recently, wasn't it?
It was. The book is Communication Chemistry, and it was released in August of last year. And the exciting 2011 goal that happened for me was I received my acceptance letter from Barnes & Noble's in December.
Oh, yeah.
So it was real exciting. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
And the point of the book is it's a study guide and reference guide for those of us in the business world that need to see how uplifting communication can be such a powerful tool for business.
Right, right. And is it, so it's in Barnes & Noble now or online?
It is. It's on the shelves. It's also online. It's on Amazon. It just, about a month ago, it was on Kindle and Nook. So
right,
all those... ebooks as well, so it's a fun, exciting time.
So we'll get your communication information or your contact information later in case somebody needs to get their book signed.
Very
right?
Very
you'll
good.
Do
there
personal
you
signatures.
There you
right?
go. Absolutely.
Yeah, we'll get a book signing going on. Maybe we could do one in here. Right?
There you go. Absolutely.
You get a little.
I'm
a little
open.
Spice going
I'm
on.
Open.
So your pearl of wisdom, what you might want to share with our listeners.
If you consider putting even a small amount of effort and energy into your own communication and to uplift those skills, you will be absolutely amazed at the results that you can get from even focusing on a little bit of effort and energy. For example, just say this week I'm going to really be a more focused and involved listener. I need to do that. You watch. You do that for a couple of times during the week in different networking events or different meetings. And over the course of a few weeks and then a month and then a few more weeks, you will see how important that piece is for your success during the day. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Just being aware of your communication. If you can be aware how powerful your communication can be for your success, that's 50% of it.
Great. Well, perfect. So thank you for coming out.
Thank you, John.
And joining us.
It.
I'm actually going to get communication information from both you guys. So if somebody needed to get in contact with you, Joan, what's the best way to reach out to you?
You can email me at my address at joan@speakingspecialist.com.
Okay.
And my direct number is 678-522-5955.
And obviously your information will be up on our website.
Very good.
And Hal, how about you? If somebody wanted to get in contact with you?
For me, my email is hal@halparkerson.com. That's PARKERSON.com. Or my telephone number, 678-662-9480.
Okay. Well, great, guys. I appreciate your time. And hopefully we can catch up with you sometime in the near future and see how your business is going. So for us here at Biz Rocket Radio, this is John Baker. Have a good week and be safe.
John Baker is a certified financial planner with a Master's of Science in Personal Financial Planning. Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, Inc. owns the certification mark CFP, Certified Financial Planner, TM and CFP, and in the U.S., which it awards to individuals who successfully complete the CFP Board's initial and ongoing certification requirements. John Baker offers financial planning and securities through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor and broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC, located at 1050 Crown Point Parkway, Suite 1675, Atlanta, Georgia 30338. This program is for information purposes only and should not be considered a solicitation of or offer to buy or offer to sell securities or investment advisory services. Information in this program regarding market or other financial information is obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable. We do not warrant or guarantee the timeliness or accuracy of this information. When considering any registered security products, seek a prospectus carefully before you invest. Make sure you consult your financial professional regarding any specific situation. We'll be right back.